InvestTalk is brought to you today by Health IQ. People who work out and eat healthy shouldn't have to pay as much for life insurance. That's the whole idea behind Health IQ. If you're a Health IQ customer, you could save up to 33% on your life insurance premium. How do you find out more about it? To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/invest or mention the promo code INVEST when you talk to a Health IQ agent. This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the April 4th edition of Invest Talk. And you know, we're dedicated to help you succeed above average investing for the average investor. No one becomes a winning investor by listening to a radio show, right? Or a podcast. You just don't. But it can be a piece of the puzzle of learning how to do it. Successful investors are always learning. I'm always learning. That's the mindset. Learning more, it's interesting. I find it fascinating, you know, the different things that push stocks around and economies around and what happens. I don't know. I find that interesting. And I'm never satisfied, and neither should you. You know, it's important that you have a curiosity about what's going on in the world, economically speaking, and which companies are successful and why, and why is that new IPO company doing so well, and why this was doing so well. It's just interesting to find out all these things about what's going on. And of course, you have to trade off. You know, you have to understand the risk versus the reward of what you're doing. How much risk you're taking for how much reward should you be getting? And are you taking more risk than you really want to? And do you understand that risk? You got to find that balance. That's the challenge. Find the balance that works for you, not for everybody, for you, what you're comfortable with. Reading, gaining experience, and asking questions. And of course, I'm open to any money questions. So let's go ahead and move to the question and answer period of the show. 888-99-CHART. Here's a call that came in before today's program.
Hey, guys. My name is Frank Murphy. Just started listening recently. Just started investing recently. And I guess I made a beginner's mistake. I'm investing through an app on my phone. And the price of the company that I was investing in, I said it was 82 cents a share. And I'm going to assume that that was Canadian or something, because as soon as I put down my first buy, I lost like 20 cents on every dollar. And since then, I've bought some more, but at the actual price, which is more around like 60-something cents. But what I'm wondering is, should I just sell it off, recoup some of my investment, and then start over at the more competitive price? Thanks.
Okay. Sounds like you're buying a penny stock, and you should never buy a penny stock. You don't know what you're doing. I hate to tell you that, but you don't know what you're doing. And you're buying penny stocks that you have that 90% of them go out of business. That's not an investment. That's rolling the dice in Vegas. And rolling the dice in Vegas where the house is much more stacked against you, you'd have better luck in Vegas with that money. Do not buy penny stocks. Do not buy stocks that don't make money. It's that simple. Does this company make any money? Probably not. Is it ever made money? Is it going to make money? Do you know? So the rule here, for you people, listen to me. Do not buy stocks that don't make money, and do not buy penny stocks. The price of penny stocks is pushed around by people that are taking advantage of you. It's not a game you play. You're not going to make any money at it. With our political focus on international trade these days, and now we all know that, that's why the market tanked this morning, and then made a great comeback. The tariffs and the like, you know, everybody's worried about that. Think about the world commerce. And what, from your, an investor's point of view, world commerce, do you think it's going to stop? If you only think domestically, you're missing out on international emerging market investment opportunities. They're out there. So why do some investors restrict their exposure to just the U.S. You don't have to. Now, there are times when the U.S. looks much more attractive than foreign, and then you do restrict yourself. But, you know, generally speaking, you got to think globally on these things. So think, you know, and don't miss, I don't want you to have a huge percentage of global or foreign stocks. I do not. It should be mostly domestic stocks. But having that exposure, there's nothing wrong with international and emerging market exposure. It's good for you. It helps diversify. So the outlook for non-domestic stocks looking forward is pretty positive. And if you're looking at the forecast anyways, our forecast here in the U.S. is pretty positive too. But corporate earnings are beginning to show increasing strength outside the United States is making those companies look more attractive. And it's really simple. Look at their economies. The economies are doing better and better outside the United States. Ours is too. Don't think ours isn't. But, you know, for years they've been worse and there was no growth. And we were the only one that's having any kind of growth. But now that they are finally catching up. So, do you have any questions about investing internationally or emerging markets? Give me a call. 888-99-CHART. That's our number. 888-992-4278. Okay, but what happened today? The market fell 500 points at the beginning of the day. 500. First couple hours, down 500 points on the Dow. It ended up being up 231 points from the Dow, 101 points on the NASDAQ, and 30 points on the S&P. The NASDAQ led the way in percentage today, up. So that was we would call this a reversal day. And many times reversal days are important to see if they can maintain that reversal momentum over the next couple of days. Now, the only reason why it was down really big was because of, you know, details coming out about tariffs both in the U.S. and China against each other. So everybody's all worried about a trade war. Will that happen, really? I'm not convinced of it. So what's our talking points today? Our talking points are going to, is this 2018 going to look like 2008? Remember, 2008 was the year the market really crashed. The last time it crashed, it was 50%+ overall in that bear market. Is this going to be, is there any similarities? What are the differences? We're going to talk about that. Cash out refis are back. Remember, cash out refinancing of people's homes. Cash out meaning taking more money out when they remortgage and they have a higher mortgage. They're back. Is that a problem? Three reasons gold will rally this year. Gold will rally this year. Now, don't get carried away. It's not going to double or triple anything like that. But it should rally. I got three reasons why. And which sectors and stocks will suffer the most, damage, collateral damage from the China-U.S. trade conflict that's developing. So which sectors, which stocks are going to be hurt the most? And we'll share some of those too. Anyways, that's what we're going to talk about. Of course, you come first. This is Invest Talk. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. The diversification we talk about has many dimensions. It's not just picking lots of different stocks. Not just that. You need to spread your investments over a number of different asset classes, different sectors, large, mid, small cap stocks. You know, you got to emerging markets, different classes of equities. You have a question about diversification? 888-99-CHART. You can ask me right now.
InvestTalk continues. If one of your financial goals is to fund your child's college education, you'll probably want to open a 529 plan to reap the potential tax benefits too. If you want to know more, that may be one of the things you want to talk about now on InvestTalk, our number 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART. We're going to talk to my favorite guy in New York. How are you doing, James?
I'm doing fine. How are you today?
Good. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Yeah, yes. Thank you.
I'd like to know something. I have presently my 401k, my allocation set up the following. I have about 40% large cap funds. I have 30% mid-cap funds, roughly 20% small cap, and a 10% in international. I'm 31 years old, and I was wondering if there might be any rebalancing changes that I need to do. Is that something? I usually don't rebalance. I usually keep it generally the same. Mm-hmm. I don't really touch it too much. Is there anything doing with?
There's nothing wrong with that, James, what you have, that allocation, except that there's one little thing I might change. That 10% in international, you have a lot of overlap with the large cap companies in that international. You might move that 10% to like emerging markets. Therefore, you get a different group of stocks. There's nothing wrong with international, but international means also U.S. and non-U.S. stocks, and they usually are big cap companies. So, and you're getting a lot of that already in your large cap mutual fund. So that would be, now, but there's nothing wrong with doing what you're doing.
I don't know that I have a emerging markets option in my current program's offerings. So would that be better put in maybe like a fixed income or anything like that?
No, you're too young for that. You're way too young for any kind of fixed income of any kind. You want to stay in the market, and yeah, the market will fall. The market's going to fall. It always falls, but it always comes back higher. So you just stay the course, and that would be a lot smarter. If you don't have anything, you don't have an emerging market, then just stick with the international, and I see nothing wrong with what you're doing. Now, I will say this. I think value stocks generally are going to work better than growth stocks, but you may not have a choice between that kind of specification,
no,
you know, of where you go. So, I have nothing wrong with your allocation, James. It's good. Stick with it. Appreciate the call. Thank you.
Thank you.
888-99-CHART, everybody. 888-992-4278. We're going to talk to Mike in San Jose. How you doing, Mike?
Good, thank you, Steve. I was wondering if you look at the ABBV chart and give me your opinion, please.
Okay, A, B, B, V is in Victor, everybody. A, B, B, I think that's MBEV. Let me pull it. A, B, B, V. Oh, come on, Steve. A, B, B, V. I'm pulling it up on different software, everybody. And it just takes me a second if I don't have a little time beforehand. Okay, we're looking at it. It's been falling pretty, you know, recently from like $120 this, this month? Yeah, down to 92. So it's fallen pretty hard, and it's right at the 200-day moving average right now. Now, what is AbbVie? They develop Humira, other pharmaceutical and biological treatments for the rheumatoid arthritis, psoriasis, Crohn's disease. It is a good, solid company, $147 billion strong, and I think it looks like a pretty good bargain at this price. If it holds this 200-day moving average, which is 91.50 or so, and today's price is 92.94, this would be an ideal place to pick it up. I kind of would wait to see if it holds, wait a few days, a week or two, and then this would be a good price. You're talking about a stock that's around, you know, 14 PE, has a huge return on equity, 185%. It's huge. Pays a 4.1% dividend, still growing 9, 10 to 14% per quarter sales, 30% this year for earnings, 16% more next year. Yeah, so this is a good company, Mike, and this is a good price. Now, it doesn't mean it can't go down more, but this is a good price. Okay?
Okay, great. Thank you.
Appreciate the call. This is InvestTalk, everybody. This is a place to ask questions. I love your questions. It's also a place to share your any investment experiences you want to share. Be happy to talk to you about that. So tell us about your makeup of your portfolio, maybe like we just heard from James about his 401k. How has it changed in the past year? Has it? Give me a call. 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk continues now, a service of KPP Financial. Besides trust, the second most important element in a good business relationship is accessibility. Whether you're a client or just need an answer to an important money question, they're there for you. Check in now if you have a question for Invest Talk, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We're going to talk to Gary in San Jose. How you doing, Gary?
Good, Steve. So I've been watching AmeriGas, which is APU, for a while, and it was at 45, and all of a sudden it kind of dropped down to 40. And I'm just wondering what you thought of this stock. Do they have the money to pay the dividend? It's almost, you know, it's 9%.
Yeah, no, yeah, nice dividend. Engage, AmeriGas, APU, everybody, is engaged in retail propane distribution through 1,900 locations in the U.S. to 1.8 million customers. It's a $3.7 billion company. So a mid-cap, but on a little bit smaller side than the mid-cap, but a pretty decent-sized company, growing very nice. Sales are up 16% last quarter, 12% the quarter before that, 6% the quarter before that. So it's going in the right direction. They're going to make $2.56 this year. That's 20% more than last per share. And $2.73 next year, it's another 7% per share, and it's a $39 stock, almost 40, $39.84. So, can it pay 9%? Well, 10%, of course, would be $4. They don't make $4, so they're probably not going to be able to maintain that. However, the cash flow is $4.18 a share. They can have a pretty hefty dividend. They still can pay a hefty dividend. But I don't, Gary, it's hard for me to believe that they'll keep up that hefty of a dividend.
You know, it's been this way forever. I mean, 3 years ago I owned it and I sold it, and because it started to go down and went down to like 33 or 35. And I think I sold it right around, you know, this price, 38, 39. And so now it's went back way up to 46, and now it's back down to 39, you know, whatever. But they have never cut their dividend in the last 7 or 8 years. So I don't know.
Well, how they're doing that is look at their debt. See, they have very large debt.
Are they increasing debt? They're increasing debt or not?
Yes. It looks like, from what I can see here, I did do more research, but it looks like debt is increasing. So that's how they're maintaining that. And that's a story that can't be maintained forever. It can't. It won't. It just won't last. They'll either have to cut the dividend way back, which is the likely thing they will do, because they're going to have to address their debt. Now, I'm not sure. Maybe they bought a competitor or something to gather that debt. I can't tell from
what
I'm looking at.
They did. They bought a competitor a year ago.
Okay. So that probably explains a lot of that debt. And now the question is that competitor accretive to the bottom line so that they can maintain a higher dividend? So all that stuff I can't tell, Gary, by just looking at it on the screens I have.
Sure.
I'd have to do more research. But it does look like it does find support right around this area, has for a long time, and it could easily be, again, run back up into the at least the low 40s and mid-40s. I can see that happening easily. You know, but
sure.
Take a look at the debt. That's the biggest issue of the whole thing. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it, Gary. APU, everybody, AmeriGas, paying 9%+ dividend. Not bad. Mike in Tampa. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, Steve. I was wondering, you know, I'm taking a look at a lot of the insurance stocks, and I'm wondering why they're all trading below book value. Like, for example, Prudential, and another one, MetLife, I was taking a look. They're all below book value, and, you know, they're supposed to benefit with increased interest rates and the tax cuts. And I was just wondering, you know, since you worked in this space, if we could take a look, why they're below so cheap. It just seems strange.
Yeah, they seem to be one of the laggards as far as valuation. In other words, they're the lowest sector as far as valuations. And it's been, Mike, it's perking my interest up. There's several insurance companies I'm looking at as possible buys. And Prudential is a very strong one, $44 billion company. That's $104 per stock, $104 per share, but it's going to make $12.14 this year. That's 15% more than last year. That's per share. And then $12.88 next year, another 6%. $12.88 on $104 stock. Now,
right.
The problem you have is insurance companies usually trade at a lower P.E. ratio. Okay, generally speaking, they do. This one is range of 6 to 12. And the P.E. is going to be, what, 8 next year? 9? 8, 9? So it pays a 3.4% dividend. I kind of like this. Is really strong support right around $100. It's really strong support here. $100 to $102. It doesn't want to go below that. It's been there before. It's bounced off there before. So if you're going to buy it, this would be the area to buy it. I mean, it's a big blue chip kind of core holding kind of company.
Right.
So, okay. I don't know why it's cheap. The whole industry is inexpensive. And, you know, it's just, I don't know why. People don't, just not attracted to it. But I think value stocks are going to work better than growth.
And they're probably buying treasuries. I mean, I'd imagine benefits them.
Yeah. Yeah. It would. Interest rates won't hurt them at all. Appreciate the call. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. So what's coming up on the next Invest Talk? What's the right benchmark for a 60-year-old investor? That will be one of the topics on Invest Talk on Thursday. We're here to answer your questions. 888-99-CHART.
We'll continue with Invest Talk next. But first, a question. Do good drivers usually pay less for car insurance? Of course they do. So shouldn't the same thing apply to life insurance? Well, that's the whole idea behind Health IQ. Health IQ can save customers up to a third on life insurance, up to 33%. Well, here are the facts. Physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes. So here's another reward for staying fit: lower insurance rates. InvestTalk is sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people like runners, cyclists, vegetarians get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/invest to see if you qualify. That's healthiq.com/invest. Or mention the promo code INVEST so they'll know you're an Invest Talk listener when you talk with a Health IQ agent. This is Invest Talk, and we're glad you're here. Please know that if you have a question, whether you're a beginner or an experienced investor, all are welcome. The anytime number, 888-99-CHART.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So, is 2018 anything like 2008 when the market collapsed 50%? Okay, and the answer would be no. I know people are really worried that, you know, oh my goodness, the volatility is really high, and, you know, that's kind of scary. And we did have pretty good volatility back then, you know, before the market really crashed. But there's some major differences, you know. One is the economy. The economy is much stronger than it was back there. Back then, the economy was weakening, you know, and it was driven by housing. You don't have that this time. It's much broader based strength in the economy. Okay? Back then, 2000, the Fed was raising rates before 2008, if you remember right. They were raising rates. And the people now think, well, they're raising rates now. Back then, though, the rates were much higher, and it was reducing liquidity. Now, we still have lots of liquidity out there. Yeah, the rates are going up, but there's really no tightening. It's just starting. Tightening is just starting. It's not like, you know, we have a runaway sector like the housing or a runaway stock market. The stock market, you know, the earnings are supposed to come in at 20%. For the S&P 500, 20% growth in earnings for the S&P 500 companies. If that's true, the stock market is not nearly as expensive as it was last year. You know, if the stock price has stayed the same right now, stock price would be fairly valued by the end of the year. So that's not a recipe for, well, the stock market is way overvalued and is way extended. Not really. So the bottom line, despite the recent volatility, despite that, there are far more differences between 2018 and 2008 than there are similarities. Okay, and that should give us confidence, even though the bull market is still really old. I mean, getting old. It doesn't mean it should end. There's no reason for it to end. And volatility actually, with the corrections, actually makes me feel good that the bull market is still in place, because we needed to shake out all this extra exuberance about the stock market. And that seems to be happening. That this sets up a good foundation for me, if you think about it. But, you know, we still have certain parts of the market overpriced. But that's okay. Let's go to Leon in San Jose. How you doing, Leon?
Thank you for taking my call. Good. I'm going to ask my question. I'm kind of got so there is no echo. I wanted to ask you, what's your opinion on life settlement investment, basically when they put money in waiting for the person who is selling his life insurance to pass away to get our money back plus some interest? Is it a good idea?
Well, it's not a bad idea, life settlements. It's not a bad idea. Matter of fact, someone who invests those is Warren Buffett, and through his insurance companies. They do those all the time. Life settlements is a – I'm not, you know, that knowledgeable in that area, but I know that over the long haul, they have been – they have returned a decent return. They've made decent money for people who do it. I just don't know how to do it. I'm not an expert on that. And if I was going to do something like that, I'd probably, you know, do a mutual fund that's specialized in it. I don't know if I would try to do it any other way than buying a company that's how they make money. Leon, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Interesting question. 888-99-CHART. How much time should I have or should you spend in managing your money to properly do it, to manage your portfolios? Do you need a living will? Do you need a trust? Do you need life insurance? What kind? Should beginners start out with individual stocks? How much of my portfolio, your portfolio, should be in dividend-paying stock? You know, these are lots of important questions that you have to ask yourself. You just don't keep buying individual stocks and say, okay, I built a portfolio. That's not the proper way. You got to think about it a little bit deeper than that. So ask your questions, 888-99-CHART, just a direct line.
As investors, the direction of interest rates is important, as increasing the rate usually slows economies. But because it's so low, so far there's been no reaction. Learn more about this story and others right now on investtalk.com. Just click on the InvestTalk tab and then Income Marketplace.
Hello, this is John from Charlotte. I bought some Target back when it was in its low 50s, and I bought it for the dividends, but I had a pleasant surprise, and as you know, the Target's gone up nearly 40% increase, but that's driven the dividend yield down to about 3.5%. What I'm considering to do is sell the Target and buy another dividend stock with higher yields, such as B&G Foods or maybe Duke. I'd like to get your opinion on this strategy. Thank you. Bye.
Okay, so you bought Target, TGT, at a much lower price now, and you're telling me that now that's gone up, the dividend yield is 3.5%, and you don't like it because you're getting 3.5%. That's wrong. It's 3.5% on the current price, not on your price. Remember, dividends are paid in dollars. They're dollars and cents. So the dividends paid, like for instance, the dividends paid in a dollar per share. And the percent is just based on what the current price is. So if the dividend was $1 last year and the price of the stock was $10 last year, that's a 10% dividend. If you bought it at $10 last year, you're still getting 10%, even though the stock went up to $20 a share. And $1.20 is only 5%, but you're still getting 10. Think about the math. So there's no, the point is, there's no reason to sell this because you want a higher dividend. You are getting a higher dividend. Think about the math. Do the math. What's your price? And how much money are they paying in cash, in dividend? And you figure out the percentage. Don't use on current percentage, on current price, because percentage changes with the price, and you bought it much cheaper. So make sure you check that out and get the real story on what your personal dividend yield is on your cheaper price stock, when you bought it cheaper. Okay? How much time should I have to spend to properly manage? I mean, it's really up to you. How much time do you have? If you don't have a lot of time, you hire some people like me or you buy mutual funds, you know. But even if you do, you still have to spend some time. You got to understand what's going on. So no matter what you do, you need to spend some time on your portfolio every so often. Let's talk to Art in Menlo Park. How you doing, Art?
Good, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. I appreciate the call.
I just wanted to ask you what you thought about hard money lenders as far as investing in the yields, I guess. And
okay, for you to invest.
Collateralize it by, pardon me?
Go ahead. You mean by, are you talking about first and second trust deeds?
Right. And they're usually backed by existing real estate?
Property. Yeah.
Right.
I like them, Art. I do like them. But let me tell you some of the dangers. And for everybody else, there are firms out there that do this for a living where you can buy first, second trust deeds, sometimes third trust deeds, even though I get nervous about the third ones, first and second trust deeds on property. And it's called hard money lending because the person who owns a property can't get a loan for some reason or another. Maybe their credit's bad. Okay, you got to think about that. Maybe they have too much on loans already on other properties, and then they have this loan come due on a property, and they can't get qualified. They can't refinance it with regular refinancing, so they look for other financing in the secondary market, and that's called hard money, meaning they pay very high interest, 9%, 10%, 11%, depends on whatever they can get. Now, you as an investor get that 9%, 10%, 11% and help them refinance that. The danger, if they can't pay it, you might end up with a piece of property. And also, you got to be careful that there's enough equity in that property. And Art, I don't like to loan more than 50% of value on these properties. So that's where you have to really concentrate. How much equity is in this property, because you might end up with the property.
Right?
So
yeah, because
it's a good way to make money, but just remember, that's the danger.
Do you know what they normally pay out on, like, bridge-type loans, you know, the shorter terms?
Oh, yeah. Usually it's a much higher rate, but, of course, it's a bridge loan, so it's a much shorter. It's a much shorter period. A bridge loan, everybody, is usually, when you're talking about construction, the contractor borrows money to construct the property. They build the property, but they have to have a loan to bridge it, bridge the first loan, the construction loan, before they sell all the property. You know, let's say they're building an apartment complex. They got to sell that property, or a condominium complex. They got to sell those condominiums or apartment. They got to rent that out. They don't have the money to. And then once they have enough, if an apartment, say they have enough occupancy, then they can turn that into a regular mortgage. And that's the bridge loan between construction and mortgage. There's what's called a bridge loan, and that's what the artist is talking about. Yeah, those are good too. No, I don't have a problem with them. You just got to know what you got to know a real estate, Art. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank all you, right. Art. Thanks a lot, Steve.
Thank you. Bobby in Atlanta. How you doing, Bobby?
Hi, Steve. Good. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for the call.
Big Lot, B-I-G.
Okay. I don't know about you in Atlanta, but, you know, the Big Lots out here, there's quite a few of them. They're in 47 states. They have 1,432 what they call closeout stores or Big Lots. And I find it's interesting because they open and close quite often out here, you know, like, I don't know why, but they're pretty successful. The company is a $1.8 billion company, so it's a small cap. They've made money every year for years, okay? And they've been increasing their earnings by 8 to 10%. They've been recently increasing their sales 2 to 4%. So they're not growing that fast, but the PE is also low. So it's it's going to be 9, and the 5-year range of this is 10 to 22 PE, and it's going to be 9 next year. So it's going to be at the extreme low of its range. And so I kind of think that, you know, from a value point of view, it looks pretty good. Pays 2.7% dividend. Has a huge cash flow of $7.37, great return on equity at 29. It's got really solid numbers, Bobby. The only thing you need to worry about is this the low of the stock? And it had a big reversal today, up 2.5% today. This might mark the bottom of this stock, Bobby, but I might want to suggest you wait a few days. If it holds here, then this would be a good place to buy it. Okay?
Okay. All right, thank you.
Appreciate the call. Now, people, I don't know if you notice, but I'm getting a lot of calls, and you're hearing me say, yeah, this is a good value. Yeah, this is a good place to buy it. Yeah. Did you notice that? Now, 6 months ago, it was just the opposite. No, you got to wait for a correction. Remember all the times I was saying, no, you got to wait for a correction. I would wait for a correction. See how the difference? I mean, any long-term listeners, feel that that there has been a change, and that's because the market corrected and it drove some stocks way down. Give us a nice, really nice correction in some stocks. Big Lots is one of those. I mean, it was selling for $63 and now it's at $44. I mean, that's a huge correction percentage wise. Okay, cash out refis have picked up. They're back. That means you're taking more money out in a mortgage than you had before, and you're taking the cash and doing stuff with it. Now, is this a problem? Is this going to be a problem? Remember, this was a big problem in 2008. The difference is, in 2008, everybody was borrowing against house price when they refinanced up to 125% of the value. It's a very different time now. No bank is making those kinds of loans. They're not doing it. Banks and lenders are very aware that, you know, they can't borrow that much against the equity in their house. They got to maintain a lot of equity. Excuse me. So, of course, there's always is a possibility of potential problems, but I don't see it as a problem right now. I really don't. So we just have to keep an eye on it. When they refis, cash out, refis get out of hand, you'll know it. You'll see it. I'll talk about it. But I don't think they're out of hand, even though they're back. Part of the reasons why they're back I'm assuming part of the reason why they're back, I don't know if it's for sure, is that, you know, mortgage rates are going up. Values are going up pretty high, fast as well. So I'm not quite positive why that's happening. I might have to take more look into that. 888-99-CHARGE, our number. Give me a call.
Let's get back to your calls on InvestTalk for this Wednesday, April 4th. It's not just a matter of whether you're beating the market,
But if you're exceeding your targets based on your risk tolerance, what's the right benchmark for a 60-year-old investor? That's next time. You have a question right now for Steve? 888-99-CHART is how to reach him on InvestTalk.
Hi, it's John. I'm up in Vancouver, Canada. I have a question about putting stop losses on investments that you're going to be carrying long-term. What percentage, you know, it's reasonable to put if you're going to put a stop loss on, or if you do it at all, if it's going to be a 10-year investment. The stock that brings this to my mind is TiVo, which I bought about a year ago, only to see it drop about 50% in August. And it doesn't look like it's going to be recovering in the short term. Thanks for your help.
Are you talking about TiVa? I think that's what he said. TiVa, T-E-V-A, TiVa Pharmaceuticals. There's a stock that got crushed. It was trading around the mid-low 30s, fell all the way down to 12, and today is at $17.24. So it's making a comeback. Did you notice? I don't know if you noticed, but Warren Buffett bought a huge chunk of it when it was down in the $12 to $16 area. We don't know exactly what his price is, but he likes it. It got up to about $21 and starting to fall a little bit again. TiVa, they cut their dividend. That's one, they can't rely on the dividend they're showing. But they are going to make $2.79 next year, up from $2.46 this year, down from $4 last year. So there's where your problem lies. Remember, they were looking for a CEO. They couldn't find it. And, you know, this just had problems. It's a $17 stock, going to make $2.79. So you can tell that the P.E. range is, you know, what, 8, 7? You know, somewhere in there. 7, 9, 3, 21. You know, 5? You know, it's pretty low. And should you put in stop losses? You should have a group of your stocks that are core holdings that you don't plan on selling. Those who don't have stop losses. Stop losses, everybody, is a trigger to sell the stock when it falls to a certain point. And where to put the stop loss is very difficult and crucial. You can't say, well, I'll just make it, all of my stop losses are 5% below the current price. Well, what if the stock is one of those that is very volatile, goes up and down 5% a day, and then you have another stock that goes down very up and down very slowly? You'd have different stop losses for those two. You can't just say. So then you've got to learn how to read a chart and put a stop loss on a chart, maybe breaking a moving average or breaking down a moving average or just breaking a trend line that you would draw. There's different ways to do it, but I would suggest that you learn and read some books on about charting. That would be helpful. Let's go to Jamie in Palo Alto. How are you doing, Jamie?
I'm doing well. How about yourself, Steve?
I'm good, and thank you for the call.
Oh, no problem. I was calling about CVV, Charlie Victor Victor, and I was thinking putting a position.
Okay, this is a very, very, very small company, $60 million. And you do know that. That's a very small company. Therefore, you should have in your mind, very small equals very risky. Doesn't mean you don't buy it. Just I want you to know that it's very risky because it's very, very small. Management owns 20% of the company, which is always a good sign. You like the manager to own lots of the company. That makes you feel better. Mutual funds don't own hardly any because they can't buy this kind of company. It's too small. They buy the whole company. You know, they just can't buy enough shares to make it worth their while. Their sales have been increasing pretty dramatically the last 4 quarters. Okay, when I say that, it means about $10 million a quarter. It's a $60 million company, so that's 40 million price to sales ratio is very good. And they are making money. They made money for the first time in 2017, 82 cents a share with a $9.33 stock. That tells me that earning it's fairly inexpensive. Now, you'll notice the stock has not done well, but it looks like it's put in a bottom. So this is if you're going to take a shot at it, Jamie, this is the price that you would take a shot at it, okay? At this $9 a share. So, but don't put a lot of money in it because it's high risk, okay?
Okay, great. Appreciate the call. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Time to wrap it up, everybody. You can see more about today's talking point, 2018 versus 2008, right there on investtalk.com. And there's a link to a replay of today's program if you want to listen to it again. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. Justin Klein and I thank you for making us part of your day. And let's meet again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president and Justin Klein, chief executive officer of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial. And they thank you for listening and welcome your comments or questions on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.